They were asking the right questions.
We can stop as much as you want, by the way. We don't have to carry on.
Daisy Williams is in
the house! Game of Thrones is the biggest show on television.
Game of Thrones flipped my whole world on its head. I sometimes worry that I'm, like, alienated because it all happened when I was so young, and, like, literally from the age of 12, I've been, like, set for life. I had a traumatic relationship with my dad, and ever since I can remember, like, I've really struggled sleeping. It had, like, met its, like, peak, and I was at school. I was taken by a teacher to the staff room. She was saying, like, what's happened? I think a lot of the traumatic things that were happening, I didn't realise that they were wrong. I would look around at other kids and be like, where does the joy, when does that come for me?
When you were 22, you talked about issues with substance abuse.
Yeah, I just had that sense of impending doom and I didn't know how to make it go away.
I'm gonna come and give you a hug. Without further ado, I'm Stephen Bartlett, and this is The Diary of a CEO. I hope nobody's listening, but if you are, then please keep this to yourself. So take me back, Somerset. What do I need to understand who you are now? What do I need to know about that part of your life?
Well, I, as like a young child before the age of like 8, had quite a traumatic like relationship with my dad. And I don't really want to go into it too much because it affects my siblings and my whole family. But like that really consumed a lot of my childhood. Ever since I can remember, like I've really struggled sleeping. And I think a lot of the traumatic things that were happening, I didn't realize that they were wrong. But I knew that like I would look around at other kids and be like, why don't they seem to understand this like pain or dread or fear? Where does the joy, like, when does that come for me? Like, I kind of always felt like I felt things very deeply in comparison to other people. And so when that sort of period of my life ended, I imagined that, like, you know, everything is just, like, up from here. Like, everything's perfect now. All of those things that I was concerned about were actually wrong. And, like, now I'm sort of free. And then, you know, at different stages in life, you realize that there's never like an end destination for that freedom. It kind of comes from within, I guess. Like, when are you going to let yourself be free from the pain? But yeah, that really consumed a lot of my childhood. That was sort of like what I was identified as, you know, what I identified myself as for a long time. And then, you know, everything changed and I sort of became this like, you know, character who wouldn't let anything bad happen to her or anyone around her. And yeah, I guess like maybe there is some sort of like connection between those two things.
Your mother left your father?
Yeah, before I was born, actually. Well, no, I guess she escaped when I was about 4 months old. So it was, you know, bad before that. And then, yeah.
Have you spoken about this before?
No. I don't know. I like you.
Yes,
I don't know. I feel like this isn't, it's something that I've been like learning a lot about recently and I feel like I can speak about it now.
Mm-hmm. Has it taken you time to like, I ask the question about, have you spoken about it before? Because I think at like 25 years old, there was like really foundational things I learned about myself that I only learn. I mean, you know, sometimes you read something or you hear something and you go, fuck, that explains this thing. So my question there is just like, did it take you time to connect those dots?
Yeah, definitely. I think that people sort of talk about like rewiring. People on your podcast actually speak about rewiring your brain, but that first, in order to do that, you have to recognize when your brain is doing a pattern that you want to rewire. And quite often, like, it's already triggered so many things and like you're in a bad mood and you have no idea why, and it's hard to kind of like trace back from that point. So like that awareness and like finding that kind of, for me, had to come first. Like when it really started to, I don't know, when I really started to understand it, it was like capturing those minutes where I was like, why does that make me feel really uncertain or angry or like make me want to like shout at someone? Like what is that? And then you can start to go like, no, it's okay, and work your way back, you know.
So you were seeing like social triggers or situations where you were, you know, I saw you said when you spoke to Lewis Howes, you said, I've always been quite an anxious person.
Yeah.
And I really reflect on that, because I, you know, I'm not an expert in anxiety. I've been anxious myself. I've been an anxious person at times myself. But I've always wondered for many years if we're born that way. Mm. Or if we're predisposed, or if something happens and then we become anxious. Have you, thinking about how you saw sort of social triggers, have you connected any dots regarding being an anxious person, as you call it, to those early years as you've grown up now?
Yeah. I guess, I think like a lot of that anxiety, as I started to sort of recognize it, came from like not really being myself, and like then feeling anxious about the way that you're being perceived or whatever, but knowing that you're not really being honest, and that will of course make you very anxious, because if you have no idea who you're projecting, then you really have no idea how other people are going to hear it, because you don't even know how you mean it. And you know, that sort of like facade of like, I don't know, whoever, you know, whoever I thought was like capable of like getting through interviews or social like settings or whatever. And I think that like struggle with identity and like the big questions of like, who am I? I think that everyone struggles with that. But I think that like, you know, there's a period of your childhood where, you know, certain situations can really stunt, like, or just alter forever, like who you are going to become. And that's not to say that you can't also just like become a very peaceful and, you know, content and fulfilled person. But like that sort of basic instinct of like, what brings me joy? You know, you've kind of second-guessed that a lot as a kid, and you're not known, you know, whether to trust what you really think or feel, or, you know, whatever sort of like mental manipulation. And that can, yeah, really have like lasting effects. So, yeah, kind of like discovering that and being like, yes, I struggle with, you know, my identity and knowing who I am. So that brings me anxiety, because I don't know who to be in a social situation. But then also sort of going back far enough that you're like, oh, I don't know if that person really exists anymore. And that's okay, because I can find, you know, something. Yeah, you know, find like a good version of myself. But yeah, I don't know. What do you think about that?
About which part?
Well, I guess like it feels like a lot of people are trying to retreat to like being a child and like the things that brought you joy and like who you are at your core. Mm. And who you are when no one's looking. And but you know, can that part of you be so damaged from a very young age that you could be searching for something that you know, is just for you to make up.
It's a really interesting question, one I've never even pondered before. I was thinking about, in fact, Lewis Howes, and I think shortly after you had a conversation with him, it would have been, because I know the timeline, I think he opened up for the first time. It's so funny because when I rewatched your conversation with Lewis, you start sharing things that were difficult in your early years. You don't share anything like this with him. And then he says to you, he's quite stoic, and he goes, yeah, I went through things like that as well.
Mm.
You're aware of what he went through?
Yeah, yeah, I am now.
So he went through pretty, you know, horrific child abuse at a young age from, I believe, a babysitter, if I'm correct, that was looking after him, that had sexually abused him. And he talks, my reference is only him talking about how he feels he has to go back and forgive himself, the child that he was, and heal himself, heal the child.
Yeah, yeah.
So he has, I don't know if you know, but he has his face at that age on his wallpaper of his phone. And with his therapist, he's worked through healing that young version of himself and then moving on to the next, to the teenage years. And so do I know if we can, if that child that we're seeking still exists in there? I mean, my very naive assumption would be that they do.
Yeah.
Are they still going to be childlike? I don't know.
Yeah.
There's something quite naive about being childlike, which maybe wisdom makes irreversible. But when you talk about joy, you talk about struggling to feel joy at a young age.
Mm.
What is that? How do I understand those words?
I think, like, you know, when you watch kids play, and like there's struggles and there's tiffs and there's like whatever, but there's like just like complete inhibition, right? And it's just like running, or it's like going on the slide, or it's like, I felt like I would often stop in a situation like that. I would be doing something and then I would just stop and be like, something awful is going to happen. And just like, I couldn't continue.
Do you want tissue?
Maybe.
Jack, could you grab a tissue, please? We can stop as much as you want, by the way. We don't have to carry on. It's a great thing with podcasting. Just keep them on the desk if you want.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll hide them around the other side.
I could put them just like here.
Cool.
Is that's off camera?
Yeah, it's all good.
I would just had that sense of impending doom, and I didn't know how to make it go away. And I had like great memories. I don't even know. It's hard to remember a lot of them. A lot of those times that I felt very free, I was actually on my own. But I would never have like thought I was like an introverted person. Like I always would have thought that I was quite extroverted because I'd perform a lot for people, you know? I struggled with that when I was a kid. And just thought like, how do I stop feeling like this and just feel like everything's okay, you know?
But at that age, I'm guessing you didn't know why you felt like that. So knowing how to go about healing from it is an impossible task, right?
It's good. Yeah.
That's the point about you can't solve for something that you're not aware of.
Yeah. Going like, nothing's wrong. Like, nothing is wrong. Everything's the way that it's supposed to be. But it wasn't. But I just would tell myself that, like, what is wrong with you? Like,
was there an age when you found out? Because, but I kind of asked this question earlier. But was there a moment where you found out what was wrong?
Yeah, when I was about 8, it's quite like a complex like string of events that happened. But basically it had like met its like peak, and I was at school, and I guess I was, well, I mean, obviously I was really struggling. And I don't really know what happened, but I was taken by a teacher to the staff room, and she was saying, like, what's wrong? You know, like, what's happened? Are you hungry? Well, no, she said, I don't know. Yeah, are you hungry? I said, yeah. She said, did you eat breakfast? And I said, no. And she said, oh, why not? And I said, we just didn't have any breakfast. And, you know, and then she says, well, you know, do you normally have breakfast? And I said, not really. And so, you know, the sort of, they were asking the right questions.
It's okay, take your time. I'm going to come and give you a hug. I feel really compelled to give you a hug. You okay?
Yeah. No, I do think it's important because I had so many people who loved and cared about me so much, but I'd never been asked the right questions where I could really say what was wrong. My mum came to school and picked me up, and my siblings were also at secondary school at the time, and they, some of them were with mum, and one was not, and they were with dad still, and yeah. And it was the first time that, like, it was all of the doors were sort of open, and all of these things that we were experiencing were, like, out on the table. And it was really, really hard because I still wanted to fight and say, no, like, these things aren't bad. Like, you're trying to take me away from my dad and that's wrong. You know, like, because I was, like, indoctrinated in a way, like, you know, I think that's why I'm obsessed with cults, because I'm like, I get it. I get it. I was in a child cult against my mother. Yeah. So I really was sort of fighting it for at the beginning. But basically, like, my whole world, like, flipped on its head. And even though all of these things that I was feeling, I thought, oh my God, I'm so glad I don't have to see my dad anymore. It still was, like, against everything that I had ever knew to be true, you know?
Mm.
I don't know if I'm being too cryptic. No, I don't think I am.
I don't think you are. You can be as cryptic as you want to be.
But yeah.
I understand what you're saying, and that's one that I need to get the context. And you can just talk as whatever you want to talk about in terms of what makes you comfortable. I don't know where your line is.
I'm figuring it out.
So you just you lead there. When I watch cult documentaries, there's a lot of manipulation that goes on in these documentaries. There's a lot of fear that causes silence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's usually why people find it, that's often why people find it difficult to leave those situations. And then when they do have these, like, I always observe this, like, conflicting array of emotions. Like, they have this love for this person, but at the same time, as you've described it, once out of that situation, they're somewhat, probably, you know, spiritually free and happy to be gone. So that conflict of emotions always fascinated me, how two truths can almost exist in the same place.
Mm-hmm. You can feel, you know, so liberated and free, and at the same time, just like that impending doom is kind of still there. Where, yeah, it's like all your problems don't just sort of, like, go away, you know. Yeah, you still care a lot about that person, or you still sort of understand, you know, the pain or whatever that led to those very, very poor decisions.
As you sit here today at 25 years old, how do you feel about your father?
Well, to be honest with you, I've been thinking about this a lot. And like I've been trying to do this thing where I stop taking things personally, and like not just like, you know, when someone's had a bad day and they like push in front of you in the queue, but like the big things in life. Like, what if I said that it was not like it wasn't because of me that that happened? Like, if I wasn't there, it would have been someone else. Like, it's not, it wasn't like because there's something wrong with me that like these bad things happened when I was a child.
Is that a thought you had?
Yeah. I felt like there was something inherently wrong with me or us, because like we did lots of things wrong all the time, which is like why, you know, you'd be mistreated or whatever, because you're like, oh, like we really need to be better at this because we keep doing things wrong and we keep getting in trouble type thing. But then I was like, well, you know, like, and especially, well, because it was someone, you know, a parent, and I felt like, oh, they're supposed to like you. And so, you know, but then I was like, well, what if like there's just like no connection between like me being, you know, his daughter and like it could have been like literally anyone like experiencing that pain and it would like still be the same. And then I just kind of could separate myself from it a little bit, and I could start to sort of reflect on him as a person and be like, what happens that you get so stuck in your mind that you can just like, you know, permanently like mistreat people? You know, what
children,
like your own children. but you know, taking that step back and seeing it like more objectively kind of like makes me quite interested in the guy. I don't know him at all. And I'm like, what happened to you when you were a kid? Like, who were your parents? Is this something that you were always like when you were a kid? Did you like pull the legs off bugs? Or like, you know, did you learn this? Like, you know?
These are all the questions that I would ask.
Yeah. And so that's kind of like how I feel about him now, where I'm just like, what if, like, he would make a fascinating documentary.
Yeah.
And it's like nice to like, you know, not feel the personal pain of that anymore, and actually just think like, you know, I don't know if any of the answers to that will like help me in my journey, but it is sort of like a nicer way to think of him than, you know, as like someone who doesn't love me or like me or like whatever.
You know, you talked about that feeling that you were to blame for outcomes in your life that might, well, especially as it relates to your early years, that you weren't to blame for. Were there symptoms of that as you grew up? This kind of the feeling that, you know, when things happen, it was because you did something wrong, or you were to blame for things. Did you feel that as an adult and in your teenage years at all?
Yeah, definitely. I think that like I really wanted to control a lot of things that you just can't control, because like if I don't, then if I'm not worrying or thinking about this or like wanting to control this, then like it's all going to fall down, and like then I'll blame myself and it will be like a you know, something that I could have done better or should have done differently. Yeah, I feel like, I guess it was more just like trying to control like the uncontrollable, and that then leading to like another way that I could like beat myself down, you know.
It's interesting because I've seen so many other interviews you've done, and without knowing that early context, a lot of the things I was hearing didn't
make sense.
Yeah. Not that it, you know, if make sense is maybe an interesting use of words, but it always felt like there was part of your story that was untold.
Yeah. It you know, I think when I was like 12 and I'd done a bit of Game of Thrones and was doing interviews then, like the first interviews that I'd ever done, I remember people sort of being like, but you're so young. Like, how do you pretend, like, how do you show this pain? Like, you've just seen like the death of your father, or like, how do you know that? Like, how do you act that sort of like fury? And it just like in my head was like, that's a really stupid question, because I've known how that feels. But like, you know, it's like, I don't know, something nice to just like leave in the past, I guess. But it's hugely influenced like everything that I do as an actor. Like, I get to access all of that confusion and pain in my job, and I get to like really feel it in like every fiber of my being. But there's no like consequence, and there's no like, you're not really shouting at anyone or hurting someone, or it's like it's all pretend, but like the emotion is real. And like just being able to like let that out is something that I didn't do for a long time. And so it's like it just all sort of came to the surface. And I guess like holding, you know, the early part of my story like to myself is also just because I haven't really understood it the way that I have now. And I'm sure I'll understand it, you know, far better in the future. But I feel like now there's like some sort of closure to it, where the journey might help other people. Whereas before it was just like pain, and no like
conclusion.
Right. Yeah. No, like, okay, we're insight. Through the other side. Yeah, it was just like other problems that come from like the same problem. But yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, going into that audition to play Arya Stark, I was sort of surrounded by girls that like were joyous and like were free, and like they were kids. They were kids who were happy and, you know, had whatever they had. And I thought, wow, I really, you know, here we go again, like going to be a disappointment. But, you know, for that moment, actually, that was what they needed. And so that was sort of like a moment in my life where I was like, huh, maybe this thing isn't all bad. Maybe there can be something like beautiful that comes from, you know, this part of myself that I find like unnatural, like, or like just different to other kids.
Here we go again, I'm going to be a disappointment.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you mean by that? So when you got the role, you presumed that you were going to let people down?
Or? Yeah. No. I just like going into the room, I meant like,
okay,
oh no, I'm not going to be what they're looking for. But I did end up being what they were looking for. But like, you know, I just...
presumed the worst a little bit.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I don't know. Did you like always ever feel like disappointing to people?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. There's been moments in my life where I've definitely feel like I've let myself down and other people down, and it's not a good feeling to sit with. But I think I've tried to channel it into making myself. I actually went for an audition at 14 years old to do the Junior Apprentice. You know The Apprentice, the TV show? So they launched the Junior Apprentice, and I went for the first audition, got through to the final 20, and then I got, long story, but I got this email from the BBC saying that someone had leaked to the press that I was going on the show. So they said, this has jeopardized your chances of going on the show. And I don't come from a family where we had much. So going back to Plymouth and telling everyone, you know, like all my friends were like, oh, he's going to London. And going back and saying like, they've just called me and told me I'm not on the show, was devastating for a long time. Lots of tears. I felt like a disappointment at that phase of my life. And several times subsequently, but I think I've always been somewhat optimistic going into situations. I generally feel like I've got nothing to lose. Mm. And I think maybe that's a bit of a privilege, to be honest. I think mindset privilege is a real thing, just like perspective privilege, something we don't talk about enough. And mm-hmm. Had I been in an early situation where someone was continually telling me the things that I was were doing were wrong or not good enough or whatever, I can quite easily see how I would anticipate that feedback going into anything where feedback was going to be given. And it's actually pretty remarkable. I mean, you know, because those early experiences you would assume would smash someone's like self-esteem pretty severely and make them kind of retreat into safe places. Mm. One of the safest places is where we don't get feedback and someone doesn't shout at us or, you know. Mm-hmm. But this was your first audition, right? Game of Thrones?
Yeah, or I had an audition before that, which I also was very excited about and then didn't get. So that was like my first you know, professional rejection.
But you were still putting yourself out there in situations where you could be rejected.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it was because the only time that I really felt that joy that I saw in other people was when I was like dancing or performing. And there was this feeling that I would get that I was like, this is like, I feel like human, you know? And so I was like, I've just got to do anything I can to like do this forever. And so from a very young age, I was like, I want to go to stage school and I want to, yeah, I'm happy to leave everything and go and do that. And so I really, every opportunity was like, I guess that little part that you said, like, I've got nothing to lose. It was like, yeah, on the other side of this could be absolutely everything. So I have to do it.
I read this book. I say read. I watched the summary on YouTube. But I'll just say it sounds more impressive. I read this book called The Body Holds the Score. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. And one of the most fascinating things about it is it talks about how acting and moving the body in like yoga have been proven to be the best forms of antidepressant, like without, you know, taking SSRIs or anything. They've been proven to, and I remember thinking, acting is a great antidepressant. How is that possible? Mm. But what you're saying now rings true. It talks about how it kind of disassociates from identity when we act. And so what you're saying now seems to validate what I read.
I'd love to read that because that's like exactly what I instinctively like discovered. Like it just happened and I thought, like this is what I'm supposed to do.
Have you ever figured out why acting was a... Because I say the word escapism, but why it was so liberating for you? Is it escapism? Is it because it disassociates you from your own identity? Is it because you can create this new...
There's like two parts of it. It was like how I felt, like within my body, like everything floated away. And like the way that it felt to move my body or the way that it felt to like contort my voice or like... whatever, it just like that feeling when you're like can't stop laughing, it was just like incredible. And then there was the way that it made other people feel. And I guess like with acting, with dancing, it was like it was very much about the way that it felt and not necessarily the way that it looked or like how other people would experience it. But with acting, it's like you get that sort of two-way thing. And I also saw the joy that it would bring other people. And like, I guess like you're like not disappointing. You're like making someone laugh or you're making someone happy or you're like, and that was like, you know, fun and new.
I was going to say Game of Thrones was a smash hit, but it feels like a slight understatement.
I feel like smash hit is, that's, yeah. It, yeah. Huge.
The fame piece. I've had a smidge of fame. Like 7 people know who I am, right? And sometimes it can be a little bit difficult. So I can't even, you know, I can't even imagine, especially with the sort of confounding factors of your age, trying to figure out who you are, becoming famous for being a character on a huge show.
Yeah.
Being in your sort of adolescent years, all of these things all at the same time.
Mm.
when you look back and, you know, and I remember you saying about how people were like forecasting your downfall because of all those factors.
Yeah. The strangest thing about it, the hardest thing, I think, was like needing to articulate who I was and what I loved and the things that I didn't like and what I had an opinion on and what, like, you know. That I remember at the time being like, oh gosh, I really don't know anything about anything. I really need to know these things. I need to, you know. And then, like, you know, years later you go like, oh, I said that my favorite film was this, and like, that's not true. And it's like, you don't need to know any of that stuff. No, like, it's all just like a journey, right? It's all like, there's never like an end.
What advice would you give that person, 13-year-old Maisie?
To be honest with you, like, I wish that I'd have just like trolled it all a bit more. And like, whatever, I like, instead of really digging deep and going, oh, what is the real, just like whatever you feel that day, that's okay. And it can change the next day, because that is just like life. You don't have to be beholden to anything that you've said or done. You can let it all go and like rip up the rule book. I hated London, moved back to Manchester, went to New York, and then you're like, actually, I'm going to go back to London. Like, this is what I'm going to do now. And it's not going to be like something that you're like, oh, I wish I hadn't done this. Like, you're like, no, this is what I want now. And that's like, that's just sort of the way it is. So I kind of wish that I'd have just like, you know, not just like tortured myself to know like, what is the real answer to these like silly, fun questions? And then been like, oh no, I've like portrayed myself all wrong. This is not who I am. Because it's like water.
Would you change the timing of the events that happened in your life if you could?
Like acting when I was super young. The only thing I really feel like, we didn't have a lot growing up, but like I've never.
You grew up on a council house.
Mm-hmm. And like, you know, have always had like a awareness of how hard my mum worked, like raising us, giving us everything that, you know, she did, putting food on the table, you know. But like I remember like when I was sort of like 18 and a lot of my friends started going to uni, getting jobs, whatever. I remember even though I know what that struggle was like growing up, like I've never like struggled to get a job or struggled to make rent or anything like that. And I think, not that I would change that, of course, like I'm so fortunate, but I guess like I never want to lose sight of like the perspective of like just how fortunate that I've been and like just how tone deaf it is for me to believe that I like would understand what it's like to, you know, to struggle to make rent and want to be a creative person and not know whether to get like a sensible job or to like, because I don't know what that struggle is like at all. So yeah, I don't know, that like I sometimes worry that I'm like alienated in some ways, because it all happened when I was so young, and like literally from the age of 12 I've been like set for life, and that's like very different to how I was like before that age.
Is there a mixture of emotions surrounding that, like being set for life at 12, as you grow up? Now, I've sat here with a couple of guests who come from like a council estate or grew up in very difficult situations, and they often express this kind of, I remember Jack mate doing it, express this kind of almost, guilt's a bit of an interesting word, but like, why did I, like, I remember Jack saying to me, I can make thousands and thousands of pounds from just making YouTube videos, and I watched my dad not make the same amount of money in like a year or whatever, and I could just make it from one YouTube video. And he would go back and feel, he'd meet someone. I remember him saying he met someone in a pub that was like a cancer doctor, and he's making more than them, just sat at home. He almost expresses this kind of like, I don't know, guilt or injustice. Have you ever felt that?
Definitely. Like, just, yeah, real, like the guilt around like, allowing yourself to have nice things or do nice things because you're like able to. Like I felt like when I was a kid, everything stopped happening and all my problems were going to go away. And then like all my problems didn't go away. And then I was set for life when I was 12 and I thought all my problems are going to go away. And I was like, well, it's not like that unless all of my friends and family are that way too. Cause like, how are we all supposed to like be okay if the only one person is okay? And, you know, you give people what you can, but you don't see the pain, take the pain away for another person, doesn't take the pain away for yourself. Like, and then you realize that like, actually life is something else entirely. And like the biggest problem that a lot of people face is making money and like making enough money to live and like support their family. But being able to do those things isn't in it like the only thing that like makes you happy. Like when you take that problem away, there's sometimes still a very hard discussion that you have to have with yourself where it's like, yeah, like a fundamental chat where you have to tell yourself that, well, I don't know, there's a lot of things. I don't want to take away from the fact that like having money enables you to like even be able to comprehend or like
another set of problems.
Yeah. Like I know that that in itself is like an incredibly privileged position to be in. But like money won't take the pain away. It will take like the stacking bills or, you know, or the fear of like losing a house, you know.
It doesn't undo trauma. You can't buy trauma away.
Yeah.
Even if you can keep the heat on and the electricity and feed yourself, there's still for many people another level of trauma which money can't seem to solve for directly.
Mm-hmm.
The post Game of Thrones, you know, I remember sitting here with one of the guys from One Direction, Liam Payne, and he talked about how post One Direction, he has this identity, which is he's a part of a boy band. And then leaving that, it can be quite troublesome psychologically. And I think he talked about the same thing, which is like, who am I? Where do I belong? How do I then go and find out who that person is and start creating for that? And not just being this character, this, you know, member of a boy band that the world knows me for. Did you ever feel that post Game of Thrones?
Yeah, in a way. But I felt like I had got to a point already within being in the show that I was like, oh, I feel like I'm like cosplaying as this like person I've created. And I don't think that this really is who I am. So sort of leaving the show meant that I could leave that as well. You know, I kind of like wanted to like say the right thing and do the right thing and like act like I had everything figured out and like be a good role model and, you know, which is all very good things to want, but it's like it wasn't like very authentic. It was like just like trying to be liked, I guess, right? And then you're like, oh, I actually, you know, I don't want to do things that make people like happy, because like I want to do things that make me happy, and like I want to, you know, represent myself the way that makes me feel most comfortable. And not like just the way that's most like palatable or like whatever. And so I'd already got to the point where I was like, oh, this isn't really me. And I'm like desperate for something to just like drastically change so as I can like cut from that. And that's sort of what happened when the show ended. Then also sort of sped up by the pandemic and being like in like solitary. So I was kind of like very ready for that. And it wasn't like, oh, who am I? I was kind of like, ooh, who could I be? You know,
22 years old.
Mm-hmm.
How are those years for you? So this is like around the time the show is concluding.
Yeah.
Concluded when you were 22?
Yes, when it came out, yeah. I just didn't really go out a lot. And I just felt quite... it was like the most successful it was ever going to be. And it was like most people would like recognize you on the street. And like I had just got so like rehearsed at like, oh, thank you, that's so nice. And I just like everything I said and felt and did, it was just like, oh, none of this is, it's like, I felt like very going through the motions of life, where it was like, yeah.
Acting again.
Yeah. It wasn't the hardest, like most awful and traumatic, like, oh, it was like terrible. It wasn't, it was fine. But I just like, I knew that something better was coming.
At that age though, 20 years old, how did you feel about yourself?
Oh, I didn't really have a very like good opinion of like myself and my self-image. I forget that. I really didn't like myself that much. I don't know. I just told myself that I was like awful and disgusting and like unattractive and unkind and like just like not a good person and like unlikable. I just told myself that like every single day. And so in ways I sort of became like that, because you just like beat yourself into like a mess, you know. Mind is quite powerful in that way.
Yeah, really powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Fern talks to me about this a lot.
Mm.
I know you did her podcast, right?
Yeah. I listened to her chatting about this on your podcast.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you know the origin of that soul story, like where it originates from? Obviously, you have a thread that most people don't have, which is the world is giving feedback on you every day now because you're in the press and you're a young woman, and we know that can be a pretty vicious thing. But do you know the origin of those self stories?
I feel like I've felt self-conscious like even before all of that. So it definitely, before like fame. And so it definitely was enhanced by that. But I think it came a lot earlier. And I'm actually still trying to figure this out. Like at the moment with my therapist, we're trying to really trace that back. And a lot of this like has come, a lot of the discovery has come through meditation. I've been doing a lot of transcendental meditation. Mm. And like there's something about going into that state that like brings up like a little ticket and I go, ah, like that's, but I haven't quite figured out the answer to this one yet or where it like initially stems from. But I've definitely felt like embarrassed of myself or ashamed or like, you know, thought, oh, like I'd be playing at a kid's house and thinking like their parent thinks that I'm like awful. I'm like the child that all parents don't want their kids to hang out with. Like I've just felt this way about myself. And I was like, you know, I wasn't trying to get them to do like naughty things or anything. I just was like a kid that was just like, but I thought, you know, I'm like, like I'd go to someone's house and I'd like my shoes and like maybe they're not in the right place and I haven't put my bag in the right, and this parent is gonna like not like me or like whatever. I've like felt that like self-awareness to that degree where I've like critiqued and like beat myself up like since I was very, very small. Yeah. I don't know where it comes from yet. I'll let you know.
Well, the question I naturally ask is when was the first time someone told you those? I mean, even the example of like, oh God, have I put my shoes in the wrong place? What happens if they're in the wrong place? And what's the consequence of my shoes being in the wrong place? Because me growing up, if my shoes were in the wrong place, there's not really a consequence for that.
No.
You know?
Yeah. I don't know. Well, I have some theories on it. but I don't know. It doesn't concern just me. So I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. Just like, I think that I've like, I've witnessed like people just feeling like just them existing in one spot is like them just taking up too much room in this world. And I think that I've like just taken on a piece of that, where like just living and breathing, like you're too much and like you're irritating. So, but it's not true. And if anyone ever feels like that, it's not true.
Because we can know these things are objectively not true. But it just, this is the thing that really fascinates me, is like, how can we have, how can we in one hand know that something is not true, yet seemingly we're not able to completely eradicate that story? Because, you know, I used to believe before doing this podcast that these stories we believe, this evidence we have, whether it's wrong, true or false about ourselves, I used to believe that there was some way of just like erasing it. And you do this, you tap your head, you wiggle your stomach like that, and then it's gone. Go to therapy twice, you do this, you spin around, and it's gone. Mm-hmm. But no matter, like, I don't think I've ever met a guest on this podcast that has gone through some kind of traumatic early experience in their life and has ever erased it.
Mm.
Ever. Mm. People will say they've built new evidence which counteracts it so that the new evidence makes the decisions in their life, but it's still there. And traumatic events can make it flare up. I consider myself to be one of those people where I've got to be very aware of my triggers, because, you know, they might take over the control room once in a while and start calling the shots. So
I feel like just like experiencing it all in the moment is interesting, and like not sort of like predicting that there's like an end to it, but you go like, huh, I have been in this situation before, and like last time I wasn't aware of these triggers, and now I see exactly what wants to happen, and I'm not gonna do it. And like there's the piece of your brain that's like actively making those decisions and going D-d-d-d-d. But then there's the, like, I don't know, consciousness, or like, you know, the spirit that then observes it and goes, huh, like what happens next? Like you're playing a board game, right? And like something happens, and then like you're sort of above it and you go, where will this go next? And every time that your brain doesn't manage to do that, it's not like going straight back to that place, that point, even though like that's the way your body's reacting. It's like you're still at this point in the journey of life, and this is how you're experiencing it in this moment. And like, it's not like, oh, you failed at like healing, because like there's no end to it. It's just, you know, in this moment, what can you learn? Your brain has gone back there, even though like previously you've managed to avoid this, or you've managed to sort of like avoid a trigger, or like, you know, rewire something. But it hasn't this time. So it's like, what can we learn from looking at it this time? How do I see it differently to a time when I would have like done this before? And it just, it keeps going. Like every minute is like an opportunity to like see where it will go next. And it will never be erased, because like it's a vital part of who you are. And like without it, like you would be an entirely different person. It's like, what is that film? Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. He like gets his relationship removed from his brain, basically. Well, yeah, I don't know if you've seen it.
I haven't, but...
Yeah.
I've heard about this thing called the eraser test, which they do on people, which just sounds exactly the same.
Yeah. It's important. It gives you, you know, all of the tools to make decisions in your life.
If I could give you an eraser, would you use it?
Not a single piece.
Why?
Because I think that there's a point in everyone's life where they experience firsthand that life is extremely unfair, and it can happen at any point, and it's unavoidable. In a few years I might have a different answer to this question. But the things I experienced when I was a child, no person should ever experience at any point in their life. But it's taught me so much. And I feel this like complex, deep emotions that are ultimately what I use every single day as an actor. And I can recall those things, and I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful to understand the deepest pain and fear, and also like the most liberating joy and freedom. And like, maybe you don't have to go through those awful, awful things to feel that, but I did. And, you know, this spectrum of emotions that are like within me, I feel like incredibly fortunate for, because I think that that is something that's different about me.
So you go through that phase after being 20, you go through quite significant, what's the word? Self-disparaging, self-hate, as I've heard you describe it. You find it hard to think or say nice things about yourself. Have you overcome that? Because when you did that interview with Lewis, you were talking as if it was in the past.
Yeah, I desperately wanted it to be, and I still do. I think that I've got like a lot better at it. But, you know, whenever, you know, I sort of fall back into pain or whatever, it always comes back to like this fundamental feeling that like I'm just not worth like any of it. Like I'm just like not worthy of like, you know. And that's like, it's hard to combat that when you're like, whoa, but I'm really, really talking to myself differently, and I'm really trying to like put up boundaries, and I'm trying to really respect myself and like do, you know, treat myself with some respect. And then you just like still get to this point where you're like, ah. So that's like difficult. And like, that is something that I struggle with. And I have like, you know, periods of a long time where that doesn't happen. And then, you know, periods where it comes back again. But yeah, just like keep combating it and telling myself that it's not true, and that I am like, I'm worthy of everything in life, of whatever I want from life.
Has anything helped? Truly. Not like, you know, we say, oh, this helped. Here's five tips to help you. Bullshit. We write in our books and stuff. But has anything truly helped to advance that feeling of worthiness?
Yeah. Meditation and spirituality, which are two things I didn't have a relationship with for my whole life up until 2021. So yeah.
5 minutes ago.
Yeah. So just last year, everything really changed after that point.
You did mushrooms, didn't you?
No. It was literally just transcendental meditation. And then like a couple of like very like surreal, life-changing spiritual experiences, just like in day-to-day life, like not high or anything, that I just like couldn't ignore. And I felt like, oh, I'm not alone. Like, you know, like there's something else, even on like the hardest days, like there's something here that's like gonna be there, like gonna, you know, take care of me. Yeah. And so that's like easier to then just like keep going, you know.
When you were 22, you talked about previously having issues with substance abuse?
Yeah.
Did you talk about that, or have I just inferred that from you use the word substance in an interview?
I mean, I feel like I spoke about this a little bit on Lewis.
Yeah.
But like, I don't want to undermine it, but I guess, who am I to say like what normal teenagers do and what normal teenagers don't do? But like, you know, I took a lot of party drugs and like partied when I was like a teenager. And I was in the position where like I could buy more, but I didn't really do that, you know, to a terrible degree.
We all partied.
But it was like definitely something that I was like, I need to stop doing this if I want to like feel happiness.
Because that's a slippery slope, especially things like very accessible things like alcohol even.
Yeah.
You know, I've had people very close to me that have have become alcoholics because of, you know, trauma they've been through and stuff like that. And do you drink now? What's your relationship like with alcohol and stuff?
No, not really. I mean, I'm not like sober, but I don't really drink like in the house or like on a weeknight type thing. It's usually like with dinner or like, you know, at a gig or with friends or a lot of that is like quite was quite a welcome like release, I guess. It wasn't like something that I
you were so busy as well
struggled with.
If you're filming like 250 filming days per season or per year or something?
Yeah, I mean the whole production.
Oh, the whole production,
yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, exactly. It was like hot. It was, you know, very busy schedule. A lot of sleep needed to do to get through it.
Before we started recording, we talked a bit about Ruben.
Yeah.
Your voice changed when I mentioned Ruben. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're wearing a t-shirt that he designed?
Yes.
Created?
Yeah. Inspired by these artists called Jean-Claude and Christo.
It's dope.
Husband and wife who wrapped a bunch of iconic landmarks and buildings in fabric.
So cool.
It's quite cool.
It's very me. So when I'm not wearing all black to try and be stoic and ominous in this podcast. How has it been going through trying to figure out romantic love? That was a very difficult thing for me, as I talked about earlier. But how has it been for you? What's that journey been like?
I think that I definitely like resonated when you spoke about like rejecting a lot of like relationships, friendships, or whatever, because it's like cringe or like not real or like whatever. I feel like I definitely spent a lot of time doing that and never really confronted the part of myself that I know it was like desperate to love and be loved, but I didn't really know how, or didn't really know what that looked like or whatever. I don't really know how deep to go with this. I never like had relationships where I was like mistreated. But that was mostly because like my trauma response was like whenever there was like any hint of like, I don't know, conflict, I was like, I'm out. Like, so, no, I don't. I've seen this one before and I'm not going to be hoodwinked by this. But like the truth is like they were just like nice people and I just ran away, like, you know, and cut off like whatever emotions were there and just like, I'm really sorry, like it's not really gonna work type thing. And then, you know, confronted with someone like Ruben who...
Confronted. He's like, stop.
I think that I met someone who, whenever I would start doing that and start going like, oh, he like saw it within me and was like, you see what you're doing, like you're like trying to sabotage yourself again, and like you can do that, like I'm not going to stop you. Yeah. It was the first time that like someone was patient enough, you know, even though you're really trying to push them away, to be like, that's fine. Like, I'm not trying to like tell you not to, but like just observe what is happening right now. And like, you can sleep on it, fine. Like, you can sleep on it for a month if you want to, fine. Like, whatever. And it was the first time that, yeah, I realized this pattern that I hadn't been able to capture, like catch before. And yeah, it's been incredible. It's been like 4 years now and we live together. And I've like never knew that like peace and joy and like happiness and like coexisting with another person could like be this way. I never saw this in my life, and like it's just all new and like, yeah, all beautiful.
So interesting how sometimes it takes a certain person to like get over that wall, you know. And it's funny because I feel the exact same way. We try and stop people getting over the wall because it feels like self-defense. It's ultimately self-sabotage, but we try and prevent them climbing the wall. But then if that person can get in, they can go about writing a new set of evidence. You know, we talked about evidence. That wall is essentially evidence. It's like it's a shield built on faulty evidence from another experience. If they get over it, they can help us go on the journey of making new evidence. But it's very difficult to get over. And then eventually something they do can just get inside that that last line of defense. And it's good when they do, right? Because you can learn how wrong you were about so many things you believed.
And then you go like, wow, every single thing that I've defined myself as, like, it can all be different. And like, that's like real freedom, I think. Like, yeah, just one of those little pieces where, yeah, everything you thought you knew about the world just like changes. You can then be like, what else am I wrong about? Or like, what else, not like even right or wrong, it's like, what other ways can I like experience this? Like, what other, how else can yeah, like what new sort of like possibilities are there for like who I am and what I'm gonna do?
Who are you and what are you gonna do?
I am a I'm like a kind and sensitive person and I want and I want other people to feel happy. Like, I want to, I can't like bring, like make people happy, but like, I want to, I like am considerate of like people around me and like how they might be feeling or whatever.
Why is that difficult to say?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. If I had to like really think about it, maybe it's like if that's like really who I am at my core, which like I really feel like I'm speaking from the heart. There's pain there because why was I made to like feel like I was such a monster, you know? Yeah. It's painful because I think like if I take away all of the things that I project and like, oh, like I'm someone who like speaks their mind and like I don't care what you think, and if I like take all of that away and I'm like, who am I really? And I actually just like, you know, like someone who's quite sensitive and like wants to make, you know, wants to be considerate of the people around them. Like, why do you just, like, keep putting things in front of you that are going to stop you from just, like, being that when who you truly are isn't a bad thing? Like, those aren't bad qualities to have as a person. So why am I so ashamed of that, or like whatever, you know? Like why am I tripping myself up to like not be that? Maybe because like once that wasn't good enough, right? And I'm telling myself like, you know, that's not good enough. Yeah.
Seems like it makes sense as an explanation.
Mm. Yeah.
I was thinking as you're saying it, I was thinking, well, you know, if at one point you had to be someone else, or you had to meet expectations in order to be told that you were good enough, expectations that were unmeetable, you might spend your life dancing from one expectation to another, just trying to please the world's expectations. And I know, you know, now, because I've heard you talk about it, that expectations are really, trying to meet social expectations anyway, really are the slippery slope, isn't quite the word, but it is quite, I think slippery slope is maybe a good phrase to use, because it's all down from there, isn't it? Once you start playing that game, it's this self-destructive spiral down to a place that's hard to climb out of.
Like, maybe I don't value just like kindness and consideration in other people. I'm just spitballing on this, by the way.
Yeah, so am I. Yeah. What makes you think you don't value it in other people?
Well, just because I have this other sort of theory that I've been like stewing for a while, where it's like you hate the, like you despise the most like what you are, or like you reject the most like who you are inside.
That would make sense if who you were was rejected, right? If you were told that who you were is not a good person, and that is a belief that you have, then if you see that in other people, you'd think, well, that's not a good person, because...
Wait, can you say that again? Yeah. Sometimes it takes me a second.
No, it's fine. I'm just spitballing as well. But you said that kindness was a quality that you, in other people, didn't like.
Yeah, maybe it's something I don't value enough. I don't like it, if I don't think it's, I'm worth, like.
Well, you were told not to value it,
right?
Through actions, in a sense, because you were that, and it was negatively reinforced.
Yeah.
I'm just guessing, but
yeah.
I guess we both are.
Yeah.
What is success to you? If you look back in 10 years from now and say, I was successful over those last 10 years, what would that be?
Well, there's like a lot of like tangible things that I want to do with my career.
No.
Right. Okay. So yeah.
Just like,
exactly.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, I guess success would be like, knowing in my soul that like, I deserve any of those things, or like, feeling adequate. What is success? Well, I've already said that I don't feel like it's a destination, right? It's like a happening every second. It's not like I can't stand on the other side of success and look back and be like, well, look at that moment. It's like what you look back on. It's every time you were at a crossroads or a decision, and like what did you choose to do? That's all you can control. It's like what's happening right now. Like, are you going to choose this path or this path? Like, are you going to behave one way or another way? Are you going to do the things that you don't like about yourself and continue to do them? Or are you going to like do it differently? And you're going to like talk about yourself in a different way. Like, and that's like, it's every second. And there's no other side to it. I don't know, maybe enlightenment, if you believe that. But it's about the journey.
You're 35 years old, you sat here again.
Yeah.
And you go, those last 10 years.
Yeah.
They were a good 10 years.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure you will say. But if we're sat here, you're 35 years old, I'm like, I'm dead by then. I'm like 75 or something. I'm not, I've just turned 30 and I'm like, I'm having a crisis. I'll be 40. So I love all my 40-year-old listeners. Thank you. Like and subscribe. But you're 35. I'm sat here and I'm 40.
Mm.
We're looking back on the last 10 years and we're going, yeah, that was really, really a great 10 years.
Mm.
What would have had to have happened in your estimation for that to be true?
I guess like control over, no, control. That sounds like, ugh. No, like I guess it would be like looking back at all of the moments and, you know, seeing the conscious decisions that were made rather than just like acting on impulse, right? I guess success would be like, that was a point that was really challenging. And like, I feel really proud that I didn't slip back into that old habit, or I didn't like, you know, I didn't like just go completely selfish and think like, oh, my problems are the worst in the world. Like I just like had a bit of perspective and I like picked myself up and I kept going. Like, I guess that's like, I would look back on those moments and feel like those decisions like would define those 10 years. And I'd be like proud of that. Yeah.
Do you have a sense of mission about you at all?
Mission, definitely. I mean, the freedom and like the joy that I feel through performing, and it's changed my life, right? And like we're at a place where, you know, there's a lot of people who want to make art, creative people who want to sustain a lifestyle of like making art and like, you know, whether that be acting, singing, you know, writing. And now I guess like the mission is like, I want to build companies or like, you know, work with people and like kind of continue the ethos of like, you know, pushing creative people to be able to sort of like sustain a life of like, you know, creative work. Because I'm like in a very fortunate position where I do what I love, and what I do also brings me money. And the way that the work makes me feel is like the best thing ever. And like that, those like three things I think are like a foundational piece of like being a human. And like, it's like, should not be as hard as it is for like people to be in that position. And when I'm around like down about like the world and like whether it's the government, the environment, or like anything, I like kind of wonder, I'm like, what if like more people could do what they love for a living? Like, would we actually be in like just in a better place? Like, not that those things like influence any of these like poor decisions, but like I see like so much, there's a lot of pain, like there's a lot of pain in the world, and like life causes people a lot of pain. I feel like, you know, art and like expression through art and like channeling like creativity, I wonder if that would contribute to making the world a better place. I want for that to contribute to making the world a better place.
You're a very different person to the person I watched in all of the previous interviews.
Yeah, well, I'm still the same person, but I definitely have a different perspective.
When I watched, because you did a few interviews about 3-4 years ago, and in those interviews, just like, I don't know what it was, you were very, very high energy. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Very, very high energy. You seemed, yeah, exactly.
Very that.
Yeah. You seemed to just be very considered and what's the right word? very considered and a bit more calm now.
Then? Oh, now.
Now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that that's like exactly how I feel. And like, it's so exhausting, performing in that way. It's not fulfilling. It's not real. It was like, I guess I was that way as like an escape from, the quiet. Like, I didn't know what was going to be in there when I like stopped. Like, I think that it's like quite a scary, even though like on the other side of like self-discovery or like trauma healing, like on the other side of it is like the answer to all of your problems. Like, it's terrifying. It's terrifying to look inside you because you've always told yourself that like you're not good enough and da, 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 da. And like, it's terrifying because you're worried you're going to look inside and be like, oh, all of those things were true. But no, it's terrifying to be like, wait, maybe like I am actually worthy of like a good life. Like, and maybe I'm like stopping myself from doing that. Like, that's a crime. That's not like, and I think, I mean, it's like, I've said this a lot, but it is a journey. But I think it's like a scary thing to start buying off. And then once you start buying off, then you start to realize like how selfish that you've been. And you don't like yourself for like a number of reasons, but then you start to, it's like not other reasons to dislike yourself, but it's like, you just, I don't know. I feel like you have one life and I've been spending all of this time like stopping myself from doing it. And like, that's awful of myself to do that. But it's also to do that to yourself. It's also just like a waste of all of that. And there's like that other perspective. Yeah. But yeah, just like stopping and having that. Having that sort of conversation, I guess, like with myself has like, it's changed everything. It's changed like, and it's so much better now. It's so much better and it's less tiring.
So many people don't want to go near that onion.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want to go near it. And it's funny because I, you know, sometimes with my own naivety or my own, mindset privilege, or because I'm someone that loves introspection, I'm like, go on, peel it back, go on, peel it. Why won't you peel it back? Go on, let's go to therapy. Yeah, let's fucking talk about it.
What more? Yeah.
You know, I must be a pretty difficult friend to have if you don't want to peel back layers, because I only want to peel back. I don't want small talk. So
yeah.
But I sometimes encounter people that don't want to peel back the layers. And it's frustrating because you see the consequences of unpeeled back layers.
Mm.
Everywhere in their behavior, and you think, well, you just need to peel back the layers and you'll find the source. Once you know what the source is, then you can go about solving against it or understanding it. But yeah, I don't know what to say to people when they don't, I guess it's none of my business, and everyone in their own time. Some people maybe will never start the journey of understanding themselves and healing and peeling back layers.
Yeah, sometimes people who you love and are very, very close to, and like, you'll never be able to control that or like force them to or do it for them.
Was there a catalyst or something that helped you to take that step and start wanting to peel back layers and understand? Was there anything that, or was it just the pain of staying the same was greater than the pain of making a change?
I've definitely always been searching, I think. Like,
okay.
I'd always been searching, but I never knew like how to go deeper, how to like, yeah, okay. And I think, Ruben, meditation, therapy, the pandemic, like, well, because we were just at home every single day, like a lot of variables like stopped shifting. So I could track my mood like more accurately, because like there wasn't a bunch of different things happening each day, but I could see like, I could see it. So I guess like the stillness, you know, but like you have to choose like what you want. There's comfort sometimes within the pain or within like the onion. And like you have to choose whether going there is gonna be like pain, like the most painful thing you ever do, but like have, you know, every possibility on the other side, or is it just like safer to like not and like get by and like it's okay because I'm not hurting anyone, and like I hurt myself a little bit, but like I can deal with it. It's like that's the thing, that's a hard decision to make, and there's never a right time, and like it never like happens as fast as you want it to happen, and you just like have to choose, like that ultimately is a choice that only you can make, and you can't make for other people. You can't like persuade them, and you can't like, you just have to choose, and you have to do that multiple times where you go, I'm fixed now, and then you're not, and so you have to choose again, like am I going to get back on the horse or am I going to not, and it's just
professionally then.
Yeah.
Oh, your face lit up again.
I'm like, it's very liberating to speak this freely with you in this private setting, but like understanding that it's going to be public, because I've never really done that, I don't think. And I'm a bit scared, I have to be honest. Like, I'm quite, like, concerned a little bit. It's, like, creeping in.
Yeah.
But I really hope that it, like, can help the people that it's, like, you know, or I don't know what I hope, but, I hope that it's okay.
What is the concern?
I don't know. It's just, like, that... like the media training part of you that's like, don't say this or whatever. And also because like a lot of things that I've discussed, like they do concern other people. And so, you know, there's that as well. Cause it just gets, I don't know, but it's fine. It's fine. It's going to be okay. That I sound like I'm just trying to convince myself. Yeah.
Were you anxious about coming here today?
Yes. But I had prepared. Well, no, I just had... I wanted... Sometimes I'm anxious because I don't know where it's going to go. Mm. And other times I'm anxious because I like, it's like, are you gonna be open or not, or are you going to be honest or not? I guess, yeah. So that was sort of the anxious thing, where it was like, you know, I went to morning yoga this morning and I was doing breathing exercises in the car. Because it's like, it's very easy to slip back into the like, it's like still a part of me, it's still a very very prominent part of me, so
Why did you want to do that today? Why did you want to be open today?
Like there's a piece that's like missing, and like if I try and really talk about things honestly, like I just know that there's this like massive like hole that I'm like dancing around the edge of, and I don't think that it like, yeah, I don't think that that like helps anything. So, yeah. I guess like what I wanted to speak about today, and like we have spoken about it, and it's like been a lot more emotional than I, you know, anticipated, but it always is, right? But it's like, you know, like freedom of expression and like making art really did change everything. And like, I want other people to feel that. And like, I couldn't talk about that in, without like fully talking about what it helped me escape from, I guess. So, yeah.
It's funny with being an artist that we, I used to think that art, creating art was exclusive. I said this in our show we did Up and Down the Country. I open with this. I say, once upon a time, I used to think that art was exclusively reserved for people that were like artists. If it's in your bio, then you can do it. You can paint, you can create, you can make music, you can dance. But it, only if it's in your bio and you've gone to like school for it.
Yeah.
Everyone else, we're all like other things.
Mm.
Artists over there, everyone else over here.
Mm.
And it was actually when I left my job as a CEO that I thought to myself, at a fundamental level, if I remove all these labels that society's given me, what am I? And that's when I discovered the art in me that had been suppressed because society says, you're an artist and I'm a CEO.
Yeah,
but we're all artists, and that realization has been so amazing for me and my mind and my mental health and all those things. Do you think we're all artists?
I do, and I think that you can. There's a lot of words you can use for that that might make, you know, people more comfortable with, you know, that as a label. But I think, like, fundamentally, like, since the beginning of time, like, humans have like made things, and they've just like got increasingly like complex, and like they maybe they've altered like the human state in like lots of ways, and like, you know, the way we think and the way we behave or whatever. But like, we've always made things, like at our fundamental level, like we've used tools and we've made things. And whether you like see your approach to life or like your mind as like more like analytical or something, like it's still like creation, like you're still creating things. And finding like what you create like very freely, and like being able to do that as much as possible is like an incredibly fulfilling thing. And it doesn't have to be like painting or like these very sort of rudimentary, like clear sort of artist industries. Like, I don't know, like I've listened to like some business podcasts and stuff, and they talk about like sort of like running a company.
Yeah.
You can probably have more insight on this, but like when people are doing like what they're amazing at, and like other people are doing things that they're amazing at, and like you don't get people to do things that like they're very slow at and like don't understand or like don't like doing, or like, and that's like how you can like move very quickly.
Amen.
And so it's like, but what about like the whole world? Like, not that the whole world is like a company or whatever, but like, what if we could all do what we're like, that comes effortlessly to us? Like, yeah. And it's not just like a bunch of people sitting around painting. Like, it's not that at all. If you think about artists as like that very sort of like, but if people were like free to create and to like explore their mind and like, you know, express through building, through making.
The thing that people sometimes struggle with is they will say, well, I've got this job and I can't do that. I'm a, you know, I've got to go to this building site and I've got, you know, I've got to do this thing, and I'm a cleaner, so I've got to do this. Or I've, you know, I work here at the supermarket, or I've got, I'm a driver, so I can't be an artist. I can't create anything. Sorry, Maisie.
Yeah, well, and this is what I always want to be like, incredibly, I guess, like from that person's perspective, yeah, I don't have a clue like what I'm talking about, right? And it's like, it's all like very nice, like in theory, but like get in the real world. And like, I understand that perspective. And that's why I think it's like a, like a problem like that's rooted through like even the way that like children are like educated, like all the way through to like the way we see like our working lifespan, like
But I believe I understand what you're saying. You're saying, wouldn't it be wonderful if everybody could get to that place, if that was, even if it's a, you know, and I personally think that I really would love, you know, if I could wave a wand and everyone listening to this could maybe take one thing away from this from my from how I've received it, it's like, we don't have to give up on that dream of creating just because, like, I remember working in call centers, I remember doing all of those things, but I would also prioritize as much as I possibly could, understanding the context I'm in, and everyone's in a different context, not one that I can speak to, that the way out of that for me was like owning my own space of creation, even if that meant home and like playing a video game where I got to like build a virtual world. Or in the case of me, it was I was building this business called Wall Park. And it's actually more so now that I'm like learning to DJ and I'm like doing these shows, I'm writing these books, that I'm like, no matter how much I get caught up in my identity of like building businesses, whatever, I should always reserve a split space for like creating if possible. And that is so good for the mind. I hope everyone, because I know everyone listening to this, there'll be a guy, you know, driving up in a lorry listening to this right now, but he knows he loved playing the drums. And at some point he told himself that, oh, I can't do that. That's a silly thing. That's a distraction.
Yeah.
It's a waste of time. That's the worst one.
Yeah. I think like the like snowball of like opportunities that like, or possibilities that it opens up when you just like, yeah, you don't tell yourself, no, I can't do that anymore because I don't have time, or I don't have, you know, it's like, yeah, I have to do this instead, or I have to do this instead. Like switching like a little portion of your week over to like freely creating. I think it can bring incredible things for people.
Wasted time is a really interesting concept that I think in the last 2 weeks of doing this podcast, I've started to think a lot about. It was actually last night, someone said to me, oh, we should watch, what did they say, Prison Break. And I remember like my brain went, that's a waste of time. And then I corrected myself to them, and I didn't say it to them, but I remember going, do you know what? Nothing is really a waste of time. Because if you think about the way creativity works and how we source inspiration from so many random things, nothing is, and it also, if relaxing is not a waste of time.
No.
But I think we've been quite conditioned to see if it's not productive and resulting in some kind of, you know, quantitative ROI, it's a waste of time.
Yeah.
What's your relationship with time and empty time and space? And
well, I mean, it's changed a lot, but I think like currently, I don't try and like control like time. This is taking too long. This isn't like, you know, this needs to happen now. Or like, oh, I should be doing this, but I haven't. I've spent like a lot of my time, torturing myself over like whether I spent time in like the most like useful way or whatever. But now I feel like we even said something recently, because like we've been talking about time a lot, and like sort of this discussion of like, is it linear? Like, and this is kind of like, you know, quite like, can be quite sort of hypothetical or whatever, dense things about like the history of the universe and like what we all are and what it all means. But he said something very interesting recently where he was like, I feel like what time can do is like arrange itself before you. And like he sort of talks about like his schedule, like sometimes in a week, like there's a million meetings and they're all happening at the same time. And it's like, are you going to go like, I need to change everything? Da, da, da. He was like, or do you just like let it be? And then it magically kind of like, this person needs to do something earlier and this person needs to do something like later. So like these calls all move and then we need to cancel because so got COVID. Like he was like, stress and try and manipulate my calendar to be like perfect. One, that's really, really stressful. And two, I don't do that. And it sometimes just most of the time just sort of falls into place. And so I've always thought that was really interesting. So in those times where I was like, I need to be doing this right now, but like, I can't do it. I can't focus. I can't, whatever. I am like the space, the block of time where I'm supposed to do this is going to find me. That sounds like I'm like avoiding all responsibilities.
No, it makes perfect sense to me. Because there's many ways I received that. The first one was just like, okay, I can't control the future anyway. So there's so much anxiety surrounding trying to. The second thing is that like my priorities and what I care about will end up shaping this all anyway. So like if this ran over by a couple of minutes and I wanted it to run over, that's fine because I made the conscious decision that this was my priority versus, I don't know, walking my dog or something. And so my priorities, my values will hopefully lead me. And then there's loads of things out of my control, which is not for me to worry about anyway. So the future should be somewhat fluid. And accepting that's not always an easy thing, but it's probably a better way to look at our time.
I want to enjoy the journey. So
you're enjoying the journey, right?
Yeah.
More so now than ever?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Are you?
Yeah, I'm enjoying the journey. Yeah. Yeah, I am. I just take every day. I think I've just always just taken every day as it comes. And like some days I do really shit and that's okay. But I can't do anything about it now. So I just try my best to just, as I said earlier, like channel that into like learnings, feedback.
And yeah.
Being better. We have a closing tradition on this podcast, which you might be aware of.
Uh-huh.
It's where the last guest writes a question for the next guest.
Oh, cool. No, I have. Okay, I haven't seen this.
So they don't know who they're writing it for, and you will never know who asked it.
Okay.
And I don't get to read it until now.
Okay.
This person has a bit of a interesting handwriting.
Okay.
Mine is worse, I'll say, but here we go. What's the last decision you made that went completely sideways, plus what did you do to correct it? Brackets, if you could correct it.
There's like a lot of different things that I'm thinking of and I don't know, like... Okay, so I have been working in Paris recently, as you know. And I was diagnosed like a year and a half ago with ADHD, and I take medication every day. And I like prescribe that in the UK, and I'm like working in France. So I ran out and like couldn't get any more in time to like go away. I don't know if this is going to be like insightful.
No, it doesn't need to be insightful at all.
To correct it, I tried to get some sent over, but that like wasn't working for lots of different reasons. But I guess like the main thing that I did was like stop beating myself up about like not like organizing it better so as I had it, because I was already feeling like terrible. But you know, torturing yourself over this and telling yourself, oh, you could have your medication right now if you'd have just, or if you'd have just done this, then you'd be fine right now. But instead you're going to struggle. Like instead of sort of going down that path, I just was like, it's done. I can't change it. Like I can't do this. Like my brain is like hitting a wall with like, you know, I don't know, to-do list or like whatever. I just have to ride it out.
What made you want to go and get checked for ADHD? But then even that assumes you wanted to go get checked.
I've been speaking to a psychiatrist for like a long time. So he's known me for quite a while. And we've sort of like, yeah, between him and like therapy that I do sort of more actively, like more regularly. Yeah.
And he suggested it.
Yeah.
And it made sense to you.
It did. Like a lot of the things that I like noticed about myself, like I always remember my mum being like, yeah, but you know, I struggle with this and I struggle with that too. Like, you know, and like, I think she raised me knowing all the things that she knew about herself, like in a very particular way. And I got to do a lot of things that came very naturally to me. And she was sort of forced to do things that like she just, you know. And so, but it was like funny because he was sort of telling me all these things. I'm like, yeah, but my mum does that. And he's going, yeah, it runs in the family. I'm like, oh, interesting. So yeah, it was quite a interesting thing just for me and my mum to go through, actually. Yeah, I like had more perspective on myself, but also like more perspective on her too, which was kind of cool.
What is your relationship with her mum? I realise I've not mentioned her.
Yeah, we haven't. My relationship with my mum is in a really, really good place now.
Now?
I mean, she... It's like, it has been my whole life. She like kind of gave me the greatest gift of all and just like supported whatever it is that I wanted to do. And it kind of led me to like the most extraordinary places, and we did a lot like together. And in more recent years, I think I've grown up, but also sort of like, you know, been more independent. And like that is like adjusted our relationship, as it does, like, you know, very naturally. But it's just been like interesting for the two of us to navigate that from being like quite in ways codependent, you know, like she traveled with me while I was like between the age of like 12 to 16, 17. And like, those are usually the years when everyone's like, mom, like you're not cool. I don't like you. And like me and my mom were like thick as thieves. And we just like traveled the world together, like me and her. So we were like very, very close, and we still have all those things, but it's just been very interesting, like, you know, growing up and having parts of my life that are like just simply my own, and like parts of my career and struggles with my career that I get through on my own, because like, you know, I that's okay, I can do that now. And just like the way that that's been like strange for us both, I think.
Was there a point with your relationship with your mother where you started having those difficult conversations about the things you were realizing about yourself and your past? And is there, because I'm not that close to my parents, so I've just never had, I've never had those conversations.
Yeah, like we've definitely had like those conversations. It's like incredibly painful. Like, I think there's like so much pain, you know, that you have like in your own experience, but like, you know, it's very painful to think about like the people that you love, like being in pain as well, or like whatever. So, yeah.
Well, Maisie, thank you. Thank you for coming here today, and thank you for having this conversation with me. I learn so much from, you know, everyone I speak to, but it's interesting. I feel that you're such a good human being at your core, and it's difficult for me. I feel like you're such a pure good human being, you know? And so I really like feel like every tear you've cried, and I feel all of your pain as well. I've never actually got up and hugged someone during the conversation, but no, you're such a beautiful, pure human being. And I'm so deeply hoping that you get comfortable with that truth too, however long that takes for you, because it is the truth. Mm. And because that is the truth, it means that you're so deserving of so much. More so than I am. You're definitely, because you are literally like a complete ray of joy and sunshine and love and and kindness and all those things that I'm striving to be even better at. So thank you. And, you know, thank you for your honesty, because it's unbelievably difficult and it's easier not to be. But you won't even get to see all of the people that it serves and helps in so many profound ways. So that's what I want to thank you for. And your suit, and it's just tremendously inspiring. We didn't even get to talk about how hard you've worked professionally. We did a little bit off air, but to achieve all the things you've achieved at such an unbelievably young age. But that inspires me. Your openness and honesty inspires me. Your wisdom inspires me. And, you know, I'm so excited. And you're 20 fucking five, which is unfair. It's like crazy. It's crazy. Crazy that you've done so much, and you're such a beautiful person at such a young age. So thank you, Maisie.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And thank you. Thank you for this incredible podcast. I think you, as you have spoken about, have a real range of guests, but I think that you approach everyone on like a very sincere and like consistent level. And I think that like you as a person are like very real, and that sort of brings out like a real openness in the people that you talk with. But you also like clarify at every sort of point any part that you don't understand, which not only makes it helps you understand, but it brings like the audience in a way that like a lot of other people don't, whether because like they don't want to ask questions because they don't want to look like they don't know or whatever. Like you are like very authentic, and like it's incredibly calming to be around. So thank you.
Huge compliment. Thanks, Maisie.